will be in this venue. We'll continue until lunchtime. Thank you very much. I reckon we know everybody, unless if you've got somebody new. I don't see any new face. Over to you, General.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues, and thanks for inviting. The delegation looks bigger than normal, and the approach has been from the general, I'll discuss general matters, and then the team, being specialists, they will at least focus on specific issues. So with the permission of the Chair, as indicated, we receive the information which indicated that most of the things will be done today, and we are ready for what is expected of us. Talking to the 17-18 financial year, next slide, the purpose is to make sure that the members are informed and they put in a view of how the department has performed in terms of 17-18 financial year, that is the period ending up 31st of March 2018. The annual report in terms of the content, if we look at the components, the first part speaks to part A, general information, which mainly would be speaking to the information about the different entities, including what is forward of the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and of course the Accounting Officer giving strategic overview, the leadership mandate, and organizational structure. Then the part B, which speaks to performance information, mainly speaks to the achievements against the target set, but and it also includes the findings by the Auditor General of South Africa. Then when we go to part C, we speak to governance, we look more on the structures which are supposed to be there and the internal oversight bodies which are supposed to be making sure that it is very compliant. We'll also, part B, we'll be talking to human resource information in terms of the status of the entity, including performance management, wellness program, and resource plans and goals. And the last part, which is part E, speak to financial information. Those will be the annual financial statements and, of course, report by the AG in terms of the findings. Now, just to indicate that when we look at those components, which I've just mentioned from A to E, there are certain documents per area which we need to take into account. And we are informed in terms of one of the general information in terms of the strategic planning, by the National Development Plan. But when it comes to personal information, we're still looking at the same document, but we also at least take into account the medium-term budget, and we look at the annual performance plans which we put into place. When it comes to governance, of course, we're going to look at the issues of risk management, internal audit plans, and then the scope of resolution. What is missing there in terms of the presentation? I think that's what my team has missed. Also, we are using the Auditor General report in terms of governance, looking at the findings, what is being said there. When we talk to human resource information, we look at the HR plans, medium terms, annual performance plans. And of course, with the financial information, we also look at the medium terms and budget. Next slide. In summary, just to look at how have we fared as a department, first of all, looking at the top block, which is on the far left at the top, which have got colors. The color green, of course, in terms of the outcomes, it means at least we've done very well. The yellowish color speaks to unqualified with findings. Now, the purple color speaks to unqualified with with qualified, yes. Now, what we have done, if we look at 16-17, we were not doing very well. That is 15-16. 16-17, we have received unqualified with findings. And it's the same, as we said, the 17-18 financial year. So unqualified with findings. Then going to the block and on the right, where we'd be looking at the assurance levels. Of course, different colors, if you look at green, that means those who are supposed to provide assurance are doing very well. But then if you go to yellow, there is some assurance provided. Then the color, which is a little bit, I'm colorblind. let me confess. But I will say a little bit orange. It means that there's limited or no assurance. So if we look then at the department, when it speaks to the cases of senior management, there is some assurance, but it's constant, we're not improving. And also if we look at the director general, there is some assurance, but again, it's not improving. And then if we speak to the minister, a similar environment. The audit committee, also similar. Our internal audit, there is a challenge. We seem not to be doing as expected in that environment. Then if we come to the lower blocks, then we will be going again, starting from my left as we're looking at the slide. We're looking at the root causes why there is this kind of a challenge. Let me use my spectacles. I'll try to look at that. It shows that if you say there is a slope from the root causes of why we are performing the way we do, the management, they are not fast in terms of responding to what's happening. And also there's a challenge, chair, with the issues of consequence management by the managers with regard to those who are not at least towing the line. When it comes to the issues of risk areas, there is question of quality of submitted financial statements. The quality of that is not that good. And also, when we look at the issue of the financial health of the organization, there are challenges there. Human resource management, there are some concerns. Supply chain management, there are also some concerns. But in terms of quality of submitted performance information, this is information which must be submitted, first of all, within the department by various branches. I think some intervention is required there. And also in the ICT environment, some intervention is required there. Then if one look at the internal controls and the status of the drivers there, one of those being leadership, I think as leaders, we are required at least to do more than we are doing. And in terms of the culture, which we require effective and a responsive culture, we are not doing well there. Issues of oversight responsibility, also we are not doing well there. HR management as indicated in terms of leadership, our policies and procedures, audit action plans, and the IT governance. So there are challenges there. When we look at the issue of financial and performance management, part of the reason why we are not able to get the information required in time is because of the record keeping, which is not really in place. And of course, processing and reconciling controls, there is a challenge there. The issue of regular reporting, we need to look at that. When it comes to monitoring and compliance, we need to make sure that we're doing very well there. Our systems, in terms of the IT, need much to be desired. Governance, as we indicated again, the issue of risk management and audit committee, we need at least to look at that. But more than that, internal audit deserves our attention. Now, all in all, Chair, in terms of the summary of this report, it means there is a need to improve in terms of the audit outcomes, and the role players, that is the leadership, need to make sure that we do the assurance of what's happening, and the levels are higher than what they are. And of course, that would mean we need to pay attention to the issues of the controls, the key controls. We need to pay attention to that and look at the risk areas. And of course, going back to the root causes of why we were where we are, this is what the report at least says in summary. But then as we go to detail in terms of the next slide, then we will be looking at the appropriation per program. And mainly we are talking to three programs as a department, one being administration, two being socioeconomic support, three being empowerment and stakeholder management. If we look at the appropriation, final appropriation, that's what was allocated to us per program, which totals to almost 622 million. But what then did we spend? And I think that's what we have spent, in total 601, and which means we spent at least about 96.7 of the allocated budget. Now, if we begin to look at the various classification of the same allocation, economic classification, Chair, the first one speaks to the employees, the compensation of employees. We are at least relatively doing well, but there is logic behind which might not with reasons which need to be at least addressed. When we look at goods and services, that's what we have paid in terms of the actual expenditure. The variance in terms of the deviation is 6.1%. Transfers and subsidies, that's what we have paid vis-a-vis to what was allocated, which is 0.8. Payments for capital, I think there at least there is questions which need to be answered. And I think we can be able to explain ourselves what's happening there. But that's not what we want to be. It's where we want to be. Chair, but those variances in terms of the next slide then begin to say the department has spent less than what was expected of us, which means roughly about 5.46% of the budget, which was, of course, informed by our inability to procure provincial offices as expected. And, of course, we do this through the Department of Public Works. So we need to look at that. And also when it comes to, as we indicated, human resource management, when we had to pay performance bonuses and pay progression, we were not at least quick there and on time. So there were delays and challenges which have led to this kind of variance. In the socio-economic support, we are at least close to being on target, but again, we tended to go up, and the reason again is because of the education support, which as a benefit seems to at least to be in higher demand, and therefore we had to respond to the demand of the veterans and their dependents in terms of that. This is why at least it seems that we have performed there. When it comes to the empowerment and stakeholder management program, there's an underspend there, which also is informed by our inability to process payments which are related to travel. And also the issue of skills development. We were supposed to assist quite a number of people, and we didn't do as expected, and therefore that affected our ability to spend in terms of the program three. As indicated and expected of us, we are meant as a department to make sure that we comply with the Act number 18 of 2011 and especially Section 5, which at least directs us to make sure that those benefits which are listed there are dispensed to our military veterans. And what we have done during this period, we're able at least to take care of our military veterans when it comes to healthcare services, and the number goes to 16,673. When it comes to houses, we tried our level best, 270, and of course indicated per province, and honourable members would at least also take note and realise that there are one or two of the provinces which seems not to be appearing. Also that creates its own challenges, and of course the issue of building houses being the domain of the Department of Human Settlement, ours being just to facilitate and coordinate that, and of course working through the provincial governments, that's part of the challenge. Yeah? Then if we look at the issue of education support, we're able at least to take on board during this period about 7,702 military veterans and they are dependent, and of course this speaks to basic education where we were able in terms of the figure indicate that as a total part of that 4,958 speaks to basic education, and then 2,744 speaks to tertiary education. And of course since we started with this up to date, we're able at least to take about 148 of these beneficiaries through tertiary, and they've graduated. And specific for 2017 academic year, we're able at least to have about 74 of these graduated in terms of supporting the dependents and military veterans. Skills development, that's the figure. I also indicated, if you remember, that we're only able to take on board about 952. That's a very small figure if one takes into account the number of military veterans and the man which was available to do the job. But of course, we'll at least try and give logic why we have failed to do what was expected of us. But that's what has happened. Then we are also expected to assist military veterans to access business opportunities, and we're able to assist about 154 of our military veterans. Also, that's an area where we are not doing very well, Chair. Then talking about, next slide, talking about the issue of how as a department are we contributing towards the medium-term strategic framework of government in terms of the outcomes and the National Development Plan. First outcome number one, which speaks to, which chapter 9, which speaks to the improved equality basic education. So that's what we have just indicated, that as a department, we're able at least to take on board South Africans who happen to be the dependents and military veterans, about 7,702 of those, and we're seeing at least who are playing a role there as a department. When we go to outcome number two, which speaks to a long and healthy life for all South Africans, which is chapter 10, that we are saying, yes, we are playing a role in terms of promoting health in the country, and we're able to assist at least quite a number of military veterans. And of course, we have done justice where in the particular year, we're able to assist about 933 of our military veterans to access this. But this is just an addition to those who've been there, but we added just 933. Then when we go to the issue of outcome three, employment through inclusive economic growth, which means to economy and employment, chapter three, we're able to assist in terms of military veterans to access business opportunities, about 153. Then outcome five, which speaks to a skilled and capable workforce, which is expected to support an inclusive economic growth. Then in terms of chapter 9, which again speaks to education, training and innovation, those are the people we are able to assist, about 959 during this period we are reporting on. Then outcome 7 and 13, where we this chapter 6 speak about vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities contributing towards food security for all. Here it's one of those, Chair, probably you might ask us a number of questions, but we need to at least to report what we've done. We were able to assist about 2,832 military veterans and their dependents, where they could not, they were not earning any income and they were in a dire state. So through one of the ministerial priorities with the social relief of distress, we were able at least to assist them with kind of financial support, which is a kind of a stipend, so that they can at least continue surviving in terms of food security. Then Cyril, outcome 8, which speaks to sustainable human settlement and improved quality of household life, that speaks to the transforming human settlement. We're able to assist about 270 military veterans per province. That's the indication. Of course, there'll be some provinces missing there in terms of what we're doing. That has got also its own logic, which might not be necessarily acceptable, but we are managing that. Then going to outcome 12, chapter 13, talking about building a capable and developmental state. In terms of the period under review, we have done at least a little bit of planning and evaluation. Documents were developed and submitted to the stakeholders so that at least we can be monitored in terms of what we're doing by the people like the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. And of course, we are able to put up the bus and payroll systems which are functioning. And we are able at least we do some reporting in terms of the financial performance. In the Lokisa environment, we are looking at that, and that the honored members would remember what was said to us in relation to this. So we have started at least to put the system into place. We're looking at this being operational and by the coming financial year. So we're doing a phased approach in terms of making sure that Lokisa is in place. The policies and standard operating procedures are in place. They might be requiring some fine-tuning and quality check there. Asset management, still a challenge which we are addressing. And as we talk about nation building and social cohesion, chapter 15, taking transforming of the society and uniting the country, we were looking at the question of the tomb of the unknown soldier. And there's been a project, and we couldn't do what was expected of us, and we are able at least to give a reason why we have not done that much, but we're beginning to put an emphasis on that aspect. When it comes to tombstones, we're able at least in terms of the deceased military veterans to erect about 20 of those. And then when we look at the issue of repatriation and handing over of the mortal remains of our fallen soldiers in foreign territory, we have done something, and of course this speaks to those who were at least hanged in 1962 and then some of them 1968 from the Pan-Africanist movement. That's we've done something in relation to that. And those remains were handed over to, and they were reburied according to schedule. And then about 272 families were also supported in terms of putting to rest their departed ones. Then if we go to the performance against targets, this is one of the slides which doesn't make one feel proud, because we set a target, and this was a planned target of 18, 9 for administration, 4 for social economic support, 5 for empowerment and stakeholders. But then when you look at what is it that we achieved having set those targets during this period, then administration was able out of 9 to achieve 3, that gives us 33%. CES was able to achieve 1 out of 4, that gives us 25%. ESM was able to achieve 1 out of 5, that gives us 20%. And that means out of 18, we achieved 5 overall. And that if we look at the percentage using the formula as indicated there, then it begins to show the performance is 27.7%. So this is a slide which does not make us as a department and as a leadership proud of what we have done, but we've taken note of our performance during the financial year. But then the same program or information, but now tabulated per program, looking at program one in terms of administration, that's as indicated, 3 out of 9, and that means 6 were not achieved, and then we are not doing very well. But if we go to the actual performance indicators which we talk to, 101 being the first one, speak to representation in terms of women in the department at senior level, which was a new target for us for 17-18. It hasn't been there, and we planned 58, we planned 50, we achieved 48. There's a variance of 2%, and of course that was affected by a lady who resigned during this year. Then when we go to 102, which speaks to achieved against those planned in the APP, again it's a new indicator. We planned 100%, we achieved 28%, and then of course the challenge there, it is informed that we do not have for this particular target operational plans. So we just set a target, and then we didn't have a plan of how then are we going to implement this plan, which performance plan we put into place. So we're looking at that. Then the 103, which speaks to the targets achieved against those planned on approved MPAT, which is a management performance assessment tool, where we expect to have improvement plans having assessed that. It's a new one. We planned 100%. We achieved 15%, a deviation of minus 85%. Then that means the improvement plans which were supposed to be in place and executed were not monitored, and therefore very little happened, close to nothing, which is again a challenge which we have accepted. We need to look at and deal with it. 104, which speaks to communication strategy and the activities which were planned, and we also look at least 75%. We're able at least to achieve 60%, a deviation of 15%. Again, this speaks to resource allocation, that's human resource, that's the IT capital in terms of doing, the IT in terms of doing what is required of us. Then 105, which speaks to the cases from the presidential hotline, we planned at least to be able to respond 100%, we're able to respond to 90%, a deviation of minus 10. Part of that, in terms of our ability to handle that, is a question of the public liaison officer who's supposed to be in place to handle these pending cases. That post is not filled. We will be able at least to indicate what we're doing as far as the mitigating that challenge. 106, which speaks to fully integrated military veterans benefits management, which was a new indicator during this period, speaks to solution construction and implementation. The actual achievement, the user requirements and application service specification were developed. That means we're able to develop the specification required, but then it's not about us at least developing the specification, but then they must be implemented, and there must be at least there must be construction of them. I mean, we must at least develop those and implement them, but unfortunately we could not do that. There's been delays, but what we're looking at therefore in terms of the delays in the appointment of the system developers, and we've delayed in terms of finalizing the workflow framework, and also in terms of our MOUs and policies which are required so that at least these specifications can be constructed and be implemented. So we got those kind of challenges in terms of that indicator. 107, which speaks to the legitimate invoices which are supposed to be paid within 30 days. We planned 90% of that. We achieved 76.02%, deviation of 23.92%. Mainly, again, is a question of related to the past history of the deaths, which speaks to the travel, because there's a company which assists us in terms of traveling, then also the cell phones in terms of Vodacom, and then of course the computer services in terms of, at least we're doing more manual when it comes to managing of our invoices, whereas we'd love to be more computerized than being manual. And this is creating challenges to be able at least to do justice, pay these invoices in 30 days. In terms of liberation struggle history, in terms of the research output, which was a new indicator, we planned 5, we've achieved 5, so at least that's one area where we've done something. And again, in terms of people living with disabilities, as we expected, we look at 2%, we're able to get 2%. Then the next program, which speaks to program 2, socioeconomic support, as mentioned earlier, targets plan for achieve 1, and of course we failed to achieve 3, and when you go to actual performance indicators of what we're talking to, we'll be talking about military veterans in terms of performance indicator 201, who were able to access healthcare. We planned 1,000, we're able at least to provide 133, and then of course there's a deviation. But then if we look at the, of course this demand is high, and this is why at least we're able to come close. Then proposing either 202, speaking about those who are deserving houses, the plan was 1,000. We're able to deliver 270. Lot of challenges in terms of administration and contractual issues with regard to developers and of course the land to be developed, but mainly the actual building of houses being not our mainline function, more on submitting our requirements to the Department of Human Settlement and them working with the provinces. There is a challenge in terms of us being able to achieve what we have set as a target. When we look at the percentage of military veterans who are verified, captured on the National Military Veterans Database, again, it's a new target. We plan 90%. We're able to capture 40%. There's a deviation of 50% on the negative. And then, which means the challenge there, that environment in terms of the chief director was supposed to be there, the post is vacant. Also, there's supposed to be a director in that environment. The director also is not there. So we are relying more on the two duty directors who are supposed to be running that. That impact in terms of even the people must capture those people, verify the files, and make sure at least that paperwork can be processed. It, in terms of verification and recommending, that easily gets done. But when it comes to the final approval, so that these veterans can be captured, we've got a challenge there in terms of the absence of those who are authorized to do the capturing. So that's what we are challenged with, but also we'll be able to respond of what we are doing with regards to that weakness. 204, in terms of the bursaries provided to military veterans and their dependents, we planned 8,700. We're able to provide 7,702. Deviation on the negative of 998. Of course, mainly here the application received process, but then come to realize that these people, the information is not all there. Some of them do not necessarily qualify. The documentation required is not available, and then they fall through the cracks. That's the challenge. Go to program 3, which also as also indicated in terms of the planned targets of 5, achieve 1, and we couldn't do part of five, which is four, which we could not do. And going to the specifics, 301, number of private sector companies and organs of state in partnership with the Department of Military Veterans. We planned for, we achieved nothing, and then our challenge is there. It also speaks to our internal processes and the MOUs and service level agreement we're supposed to be in place and which would be able to guide us in terms of who are we talking to in terms of the private sector and who is in our database and in what economic sector this person is interested in. How then do we link them up with the private sector and make sure that at least they are assisted in terms of their partnership. Then number of deserving military veterans and their dependents who are provided with skills. And of course, the target, I think that was an ambitious one, 4,000, and we just made 952. Again, here, the challenge is informed by the SOPs which are supposed to be in place. The chief director was at that environment also resigned, and that created a challenge, and also the approval of this paperwork in the absence of the chief director created its own challenges, let alone that the SOPs and the policies which were speaking to this took a little bit longer than expected to develop. 303, number of military veterans businesses provided with access to employment opportunities. We planned 110, we achieved 154. On the positive, we were able to add 44, which of course is informed by the people themselves who seems to be interested. They are coming to us, of course, with ideas. It becomes easier to assist when they come through. Then the percentage of claims for BIRA, which were paid in 30 days, we planned 100%. And 64% was paid as a deviation of on the negative 36%. Of course, there is question of the capacity on our side to respond to these requests, and of course also our financial system in terms of the invoices to be processed in time, and of course those invoices must be legitimate invoices with all the information required, which we are working also with our service providers to make sure that they understand what's required, so that at least we can fast-track the processing of those. Number of military veterans memorial sites erected per year. We planned two, we could not, and again, we're speaking to our human resource capacity within the directorate. This has been a challenge in the reporting period, but we can at least say that has been at least a change during this period. We're looking at a better position as we go forward. Then going to the human resource management, as of 31 March, we're looking at the administration, the number of approved posts, 103, the number of the posts filled, 79, there's a vacancy rate of 23. The last column speaks to the additional employees. In a nutshell, those would be people who are on contract and intense. That's what we'll be speaking to when we begin to talk about additional members not within the approved structure. Socioeconomic support, they've got, in terms of approved structure, 20 people. And for information for the members, that's where the housing is being dispensed, that's where health is being dispensed, that's where education is being dispensed. Now, in the home, in terms of that environment, we've got only 20 people. That's what we approved. Therefore, it can also indicate why we seem to have challenges in terms of backlog of everything else, in terms of health, in terms of education support, in terms of housing. Because the structure, the way it is, in terms of the workload to be performed, there is at least a discrepancy. But let alone that they're supposed to be 20, but actually the people who were on ground were 16 to do all that work. And of course, we supplemented them with additional 25 people in terms of contract and intense. Empowerment and stakeholder management, post 46 which are approved, 32 were in place at a vacancy rate of 30%, and then additional, that's 7. So in total, we talk about 169 posts approved and 127 filled. There's a vacancy rate of 25%, which is not acceptable. And of course, there's an additional employees of about 73. And this is why, therefore, when you begin to talk about the cost of employee in terms of the payment, we seem to be on par what was expected of us. That is because of those 73 people which are found on board, which if then the structure was fully filled, we might have been going overboard in terms of the expenditure when it comes to human resource. That would be my last slide, and thank you, Chair, for the time allocated, and with the team, we are ready at least to field the questions and take comments.
When we meet again, should be telling us what have you done about those weaknesses. It's a very clear sort of analysis. Welcome, Honorable Mutlongo. Honorable members, over to you. Honorable Sam.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I just want to make the initial remarks. First and foremost, what is the position of Deputy Minister Mapatso currently after the withdrawal of the delegations by the Minister regarding this department? Secondly, how many dismissals were actually implemented for a lack of performance and delinquence within this department, where the HR staff has always been considered in this department a high risk, and we can see the lack of capacity in various of the sub-programs and also delivery of targets. So I'd like to know what consequence actually happened and how many people have actually been fired for not performing their work. Then also the high risk normally has been listed before, and of course we have mitigation plans. I see some of the responses and the improvements and progress, but in others I don't see the actual progress that has taken place, and I don't see the mitigation plans responding to the specific shortcomings and weaknesses within the department. The other issue, of course, we know the value for money. If this department overall is performing at 27.7% of targets, but spends 96.7% of its budget, which is no value for money. So clearly there's a problem with HR performance that are running our operations within the DMV. The other matter which affects, of course, the overall structure is the new organizational structure that had to be submitted to this portfolio committee and has never been forthcoming since the last year. And we ask that that be submitted for consideration by DPSA and also with the financial implications of that plan. That plan is still sitting under discussion, and we don't seem to know exactly what is the restructuring. And one of the key positions is the Deputy Director General, which has not been appointed, a key senior position, so that delegations can be handed to that person to run certain sectors or divisions of this department. The turnaround strategy, therefore, should be questioned of this department. What was really achieved? What was really implemented? And what was the performance against all those recommendations that were made by the turnaround strategy? I'll start for the last page, concerning the issue of the HR. The HR has been a pain in this organization. And the HR speaks to 127. It's been going up and down from 136, 133 to 127 again. People have been coming and going. And the 73 additional posts, of which is contract posts, and of course we talk about interns. The issue that has not been noted is the secondments of DOD, which amounted to almost 20 plus people, if not more. Because we had at one stage in the last annual report 240 people working within DMV and with a approved staff establishment of 169. So there was excess of people within that system, but I think it was a serious problem of delegation of work, separation, duties that had to be performed, monitoring of people's performance. It is just a serious mess of middle management that must ensure that the officials at the lower levels actually do their job. And this, of course, embarrasses any senior management. If you have middle management not complying and not cooperating and not ensuring that things are happening, senior management will always be embarrassed, and therefore the EXA report will speak to weaknesses within the leadership of this organization. And this has been forthcoming all the time. It's not something new. So there needs to be real changes at the bottom for people that are competent to do the job so that they can do you proud. And they can be, of course, for us, a very good example of delivery to a department for people that have sacrificed their lives and limbs for this country. And this is the huge embarrassment for this committee whenever they meet military veterans, to know the status and their conditions that they live under, and a department that fails every time to deliver to military veterans. It's a sad state of affairs, and it just continues year after year since it's been instituted in 2012. So the issue of the HR needs to be resolved. We see the vacancy rate remains in the 20s. This time it's 25%. And in different areas, and if we know that the areas socioeconomic support needs the most people, but it is totally understaffed. And therefore a change had to be made already 5 years ago about the needs, because we see the output in that department, in that program. I'd like to then start, Honourable Chair, with the issues of particular benefits that have been allocated. I think the issue that we want to ask of any of the benefits, one, when we start off with education, which has also now become a problem, and we alerted the department to the problem. As soon as you have huge shifts from all other programs and sub-programs that are not performing, to try and show that you have spent your budget, you are then, by implication, shooting yourself in the foot, because you are now pushing it into a program which is not a short-term program. It's a long-term program where people need to be paid bursaries every single year. So if you start off a process, how do you sustain it? And I think this department made a huge mistake when it shifted from 26 million, immediately shot up to 132 million that was shifted for lack of performance in other programs and to show that we've spent money. Although it's allowed by National Treasury, permission was given, it was done, but we sit now with the consequences. In fact, the DG has issued a notice. There's a letter that has gone out that is a moratorium on new applications for educational bursaries. That's the issue. And the issue is that, yes, certain people of those who had applied before, do they actually now meet the criteria or not? We don't have a breakdown, and my last request was in the committee that we have a breakdown of, we know the amount in the primary school, we know the amount in the high school, we want to know the institutions at tertiary level, and what was actually the success rate, and what are the consequences if people fail? What is the actual policy on that matter if people fail? And if people fail in one course, can they just apply and register for a different course and just get money again from this department? And we, of course, objected seriously to the issue of postgraduate studies, of MBAs and honors and also master's programs, which is not even part of the discussion of regulations and policy. So education, it is one of the vehicles that we support for breaking the cycle of poverty, but if it's not managed, it can skew the entire budget at the expense of all other benefits. So we need to manage and control that program so that we do not let other benefits suffer in the process. So I would like to know disaggregation of all the bursaries, of all the beneficiaries, who succeeded and who didn't, what were the consequences, and how was it managed. The same thing with skills development, and here we speak where the program of policy monitoring evaluation, there's a serious shift of money out of the program, and we warn the department, you're actually lacking policies and MOUs and frameworks which is not in place, but you reduce the budget within that particular sub-program, and then you create a problem for yourself. And actually refers to even the performance of certain things was because of a lack of policy. The database itself is an embarrassment that the last two, 3 years, 2 years ago, it was at 37%. We were promised this year that the systems will be in place. The integrated system will be in place by this financial year. To find out that only 40% has been verified. And the numbers have increased. It's no more 57. It's gone right up to 80,000 of the military veterans now. The database has expanded. So if we look at the 40% now, then it's even less than what is worth at 57%. So the database is the most important instrument to use to determine the quantum and also the money required over a long-term period to sustain this department and the budget that's required to deliver to the military veterans. That remains outstanding matter, and it's one of the most critical matters. So the one that could now goes with that as MOUs with other departments regarding service delivery. And there again, that has also not been concluded in a number of instances. It's still pending, or it's partially done, and there's other matters outstanding. So education is one of the problems. Healthcare also, if we look at the access, yes, that is increased. We're very happy with the numbers, going to 17,000. That is only access. We've asked also, who are the actual beneficiaries of the healthcare system? I know many military veterans that are turned away from hospitals, that don't have cards or permission to get into the hospital, or for some reason or the other, they cannot access it. And one of the serious problems of accessing healthcare is, of course, the transport system. So we want to know actual figures, actual people receiving benefits. The transport system remains a serious problem, and there is no target set, and there are no deadlines set, and it's the means to an end that will help create opportunities for people to reach those opportunities, to reach healthcare, to reach the provincial offices, to reach centers where they can seek help, municipal services. That critical benefit has not even progressed. There's just been talk about it. I know there's one now that we're going to discuss very shortly with the Joint Standing Committee in terms of human settlements and public transport, but at this stage we're still discussing. Nothing is in place. And we've made it a point that it is one of the most important ones to create access for all other benefits, is transport. So we come to the other issue also, Chair, of when we speak about skills development, we know the lack of it. We want to know how many people have been unskilled and they actually get jobs. So they become less dependent on this department and the benefits that this department offers. And I think this is the objective of any education and training, as to lift people out of poverty to become more independent. And the state is pushing for people to then invest also into their pensions, so they become less dependent on the state, on state pensions, and they earn a decent wage, and they can invest, and of course, for their old age. Are we moving in that direction? Or are we unskilling people, but they don't actually get jobs? They don't actually get out of the system. So we're spending money, but the impacts, we see the results, there's input and outputs, but the impact is going nowhere. It doesn't bring about the change in the lives of military veterans. And I think we need to have a CMA system that tracks all our learners from preschool right up to grade 12, and then you've got the university system that you can plug into, which all, if it's from bursaries, it will be under NASFAS. We will know where they are, what they're studying, etc. Do we have these systems that we are actually using? Do we ask the departments to cooperate with us? So how informed are our decisions when we make, and when we speak about we have delivered, we have achieved? The achievement can only really be measured in terms of impacts, not of outputs. So I've got a serious worry about where we are going with this department and we're not doing proper monitoring and evaluation. So Honourable Chair, the other one, of course, is the we see there's also support of families on burial issues, and those are one of the most sensitive issues for any African person and for any of our traditional communities and in many of our cultures, including mine. So we speak about burial issues, and we see that there's money being allocated, money's been spent. Okay, we're looking at about 52, there's 272 that were helped, but the targets were not set. And of course, we don't really give a report on the complaints in that section. I've been promised that they can deal with it within a week, but many of those weeks have turned into years. And we know that if you do not submit an application within that financial year, you are disqualified and your application will be totally ignored. That is the new, I don't know if it's a written, but an unwritten policy, which we said is important. We cannot have outstanding matters for 5 years and 3 years because then it creates accruals. And it creates contingencies within the accounting and budgeting system. So we have those key issues that we need to... SRD, for instance, is not a benefit, but we understand the importance of it. We know that $52 million has been allocated. We know that 2832. If you look at those figures, we ask then, how many do we really cater for per year? Now, there's been a number of changes with the appointment of the social worker that must approve it. And the social worker is appointed by the DMV. And that social worker will go to the applicant or the person beneficiary to renew his extension of his benefit of the SRD. Now, I know that some of them have been visited. They've sent me copies of the messages they've received, the SMSs. Some of them said, yes, they've been approved, but nothing happened consequently. And of course, others have been denied. The issue is if somebody was on the system and he doesn't qualify anymore, which is supposed to be the majority according to Mr. Ozinski when I had a discussion with him, that people that should get off the SRD that do have enough money and there are others that are more deserving that needs to be on the system. We didn't get the report on that. That people that are on there benefiting which not supposed to benefit. So those who are not being visited, they just left, hanging in the air, 3 months, 6 months are passing now, there has been no response. And I think it's only fair that when you deal with somebody, you tell them they're not qualified for this, and you inform them that the SRD will now be terminated until the circumstances are changed, and there's been an assessment and verification of the new circumstances that may demand the SRD to be reinstituted. SRD, therefore, if it's not in the regulations and not in the benefits, what is the policy and the regulations regarding the disbursement of that money? How do you actually govern that? How do you actually determine that? So what are the exact criteria, or is it simply when we say it's income, and how is that verified? Because if we know that certain people are actually abusing the system, and they know the loopholes in it, they will use the money. And we know that. Housing, of course, we know the three provinces that have not been delivered. We do know, but what has not been reported, and in terms of the benefits and Section 6 of the Act, Military Veterans Act, it's required that all other spheres of government that deliver benefits to DMV and to military veterans, they must also be recorded and reports must be submitted. Now, I know that KZN municipality has also delivered houses, and we know there was an invasion of the houses by so-called military vets, some very young, that we question even the military veteran status. Now, as that didn't happen only there, it happened also at Golden Gate. So what is the situation regarding other spheres of government's contribution in terms of housing, in terms of any other benefit for that sake? Is there a record? Who manages that? Who interacts with local government, with provincial government, for those additional services that are rendered? So when we say we do housing, it's not a true reflection of what is actually delivered to military veterans. So to paint a true picture, I think we need to implement the IGR effectively so that we have interaction and proper reporting and cooperation. The other matter we will then proceed on, Honourable Chair, is, of course, the issue of the of ACSA. Now, there's a number of issues raised. I've seen the report very well done. I must commend the Director General, the DG, for that presentation and summarizing the thing just on one page and gives you a good overview of the situation. But I think it's important, DG, that we also, Honorable Chair, ask the questions of the people responsible in the departments that must submit these reports and financial information to the DG and to the accounting officer. What are we doing about them if they fail in submitting accurate information and supporting documents to the to the accounting authority and the CFO, the most senior people, and then it's overseen by the minister. And of course, we look at the leadership, it is yellow, which means there's some assurance only given. So we can say there's an improvement. ARM score has increased from the 20% in the yellow bracket, it's gone up to 40%, which is good. The green has become smaller, but the blue remains at 40. And that is the concerning area, that 40% has not moved and changed. We look at the next one, we see also that leadership, financial and performance management, and governance affect the DMV. And particularly the internal audits and internal controls, and of course that was clearly spelled out by the DG as well, Honorable Chair. So we're looking at the IT systems, and we know that is a serious problem. It was considered a high risk 5 years. It's still a risk today, and we haven't moved much on it. And CETA is supposed to have contributed. Besides, ARMS Court did their job, CETA had to conclude this arrangement. There's also an expenditure considered fruitless and wasteful expenditure to CETA. So we'd like to know, the people that we actually partner with to overcome our problems become also a problem in itself. So leadership is a problem, financial and performance management is a problem, governance is a problem, and that's why I'm asking, where are the mitigation and action plans to deal with these shortcomings? We see also the first level of assurance, senior management indicated here under yellow, which provides only some assurance. Accounting authority, DMV, yellow, some assurance. The executive authority, the minister, here the deputy minister falls out because delegations have been withdrawn. Here the minister also, some assurance. That is not good enough. We have to crack the whip. We have to ensure that people that are employed do their jobs. Otherwise, if this remains yellow and we've seen the regression in it, then it's a sad state of affairs for the leadership. The leadership is then not playing its role to enforce certain things that must happen and the changes that must happen within that department. Second level, again, it's even worse. Internal audit is at the pink here. If I say it is pink, according to my site here, sometimes the colors change. Provides limited or no assurance. The audit committee, yellow, some assurance. Now the audit committee, okay, fine. The portfolio committee, Chair, it's green. Don't worry, we are with that. We are for assurance. Yes. Then we come to financial health. DMV stays in yellow from the previous year. And one of the key issues that we want to raise also here is that DMV did not always make payments within 30 days. That is noted. Further, if DMV had paid payables due amounting to 125 million, within 30 days the department would have incurred unauthorized expenditure because there was only an allocation of 20 million. Now, how is that possible? There's historical debt, yes, but then clearly then that figure that was allocated should have been submitted during the adjustment or during the MTEC process, where the minister had to look at this and also then make the necessary changes for the budget to be changed accordingly to accommodate historical debt and accruals that had to be paid. That is not indicated anywhere. So this is a reflection on the CFO's job. That has the advice been given to the minister and to the accounting officer as the DG? I know there's been a change, and we cannot blame General Webb. He's been new on the block, and I think that he's under huge pressure taken over this department. Even the previous DG was under huge pressure and did not always enjoy the cooperation of staff, and there's been some changes made already that we've seen. So it is a worry for us. We see the filters and wasteful expenditure of DMV, 3 million. The irregular expenditure DMV, 21 million. We need explanation. We see the supply chain management issues as well. Regression in all respects. There's regression. It shows here. And the chain management, how that increased the numbers. Potential fraud and consequence management. Previous year, you have for investigation, we see there is DMV, 75 not investigated, 75%. It falls within that group that has been not been investigated. So is there also lack of capacity? We have always complained about internal control, internal audit, that is the first line of defense to block any irregularities and fruitful and wasteful expenditure.
Honorable Sir, I'm going to ask you to wrap up. We have only 24 minutes to wrap up this meeting.
Putting me under huge pressure, Chair.
Yes. Now, what you should do, you may just go straight to questions, you see, without elaborating. Maybe you'll wrap up quick.
Okay, I've alluded to the, let me try and get it to quicker. Okay. The one is the on the strategic planning. I've noted the 6.7 billion shift, a very important program which speaks to policies, frameworks, etc. That was moved. 5.4 million was shifted from database, which needed to be concluded. It shifted out of database, and with database is standing at 40%, a serious problem. 9.7 shifted from healthcare and wellness. We know the problems with military veterans. Why has that been shifted? Even medication is standing at about 45% supply and is going to the same military hospitals that have the same problems. So our military sector suffers like the general people, and they're supposed to be the people that protect this country and protect our nation and those who have sacrificed. So there is no distinction made between or discrimination between those who have suffered and those who have played a very important role, that their health is in the best condition and they continue to serve our country. The other one is, of course, a shift in 11.3 million from provincial offices. We only have four offices that's operational and functional, fully functional. What about the other offices? Five, we need another five offices. I know some of them are operating on the old system still that we know, that in Cape Town we have one. But is that the one that we want? So 11.3 million, why has it been moved? Why has these officers not been empowered and capacitated to perform their job? Then we have also the 46 million from the empowerment and skills development. And again, lack of capacity, SOPs that are not in place, speaking again to the issue of the sub-program, of policy, of frameworks, on those things that have been moved as well. So we see the consequences if you move money and you don't capacitate and use that. Honorable Chair, there were also cases, disciplinary. I think I need some response on that. I'm trying to do it very quickly, sir. If we can get a report on that. And of course, misstatements, material misstatements that were done. Generally, the Auditor General does the investigation, check through the department, writes a management report, asks the AO, your accounting authority, to then look into the report, make the necessary changes, and come back, and then it's taken off the list, and it does not then, it's not part of the actual actual report. In this instance, they were actually part of the actual report, which means the department did not make the changes as recommended by the EXA, by the Auditor General. Why is that the case? If it's been proven and been checked, why didn't this misstatement just been adopted and the changes made? I just don't understand that. So the management report plays an important role because it actually helps the department. Honorable Chair, I'm under pressure. I'll have to abort at this stage.
Thank you very much. You nearly took the whole session. Hello. But now, some of the questions are going to overlap for the next meeting, I guess. Right. And Honorable Skosana?
Yeah, no. Thanks, Honorable Chair, and greetings to everyone. I think we welcome the report presented by the department under the leadership of the acting DG. Honorable Chair, I think I want to start on the issue of the the AG opinion. I see that the department has maintained the unqualified audit opinion with matters. What does this mean? It means that the department has relaxed since the previous financial year. I think for the previous financial year, I think it was quite relevant, I think, for us as the committee to congratulate the department for having moved from the qualification to unqualified. But now there's nothing for us to congratulate the department on, by the mere fact that they have maintained the unqualified audit opinion with matters. Because it means if they have put, I think, the same efforts that they've put in the previous financial year, when they were able to move from qualified to unqualified, it means by this time you should be at clean audit level. So it means after you have received an unqualified audit opinion with matters last year, then you relaxed and said, no, we're off the hook. So unfortunately, you are back to the same level where you are, where you were last year. There's no improvement. And now the danger is that being relaxed and being in a comfort zone, the danger is that you might go back to qualification. Well, unqualified audit opinion with matters is not that bad. It's not like qualification and your disclaimer and what. But the danger of being comfortable at it is that one slight mistake, you might go back to qualification. So it's a matter of serious concern for us. I think if you had put the same efforts that we have put in that other year, I think by this time you should then have moved to clean audit. Now this one, I think it brings a question as to whether were you able to follow your post audit action plan that you did after the last audit opinion. Because you see, the good thing with the AG is not like when you write the final exams and then you just get the results via the post or the email. They say, no, you have received 60% or 50% or 40%. Then you don't know to say this 40% is from what, where did you get it right, and then where did you go wrong. So the following year you might do the same mistakes, you see. But with the old general, the good thing is that they tell you to say, okay, you got this opinion, but these are the issues. Whether you got a disclaimer or adverse or a qualification or unqualified with matters or anything, but they always tell you your issues to say, no, you have received this qualification because of this, or you have received unqualified with matters, these are the matters that you need to work on. That's a good thing with, because you already know exactly where you need to focus in order to improve. So I'm having that particular question as to whether if you were you able to follow your post audit action plan in order to address the matters that were raised by the AG in the previous year. And I also want to know what's wrong with your internal controls, because I think if you've got all these things, most of the time it's because of internal controls. And your internal audit unit, I think there's somewhere where the audit committee, I think they're raising issues with the internal audit unit. So what's wrong with your internal audit unit? I think you need to also assist us with that. And also your record management systems. Are your record management systems in place and functional? Because your record management system, I think they should be able to assist you in giving signals to say, are we on the right path or not? Those are the issues that I think we need to look at. The second thing, Honorable Chair, the spending on the budget, I see that your spending is roughly 97%, which is very good. I think we are always excited when people spend their budget. We become concerned as a committee when the department or any entity, they don't spend money given to them. So I think you are at 90, it's roughly 97%, it's 96.7, roughly 97%. But now, however, the spending of the budget against the target, it becomes an issue to us. Because in terms of your target, I think you are at 28%, roughly 28%. So now there's a question of the value for money. It means there's no value for money. As much as you are spending your budget up to roughly 97%, but there's no room for money because in terms of your target, I think about 70, you did not reach about 70% of your target, 72% of your target. You were only at roughly 28%. Now, it means for you to reach all your target, 100%, it means you need that times three of the budget that was given to you. You see, I think it's a serious concern. There's no value for money. The next point, Honorable Chair, I see that the performance in terms of different programs, well, some were at 20%, others were at 25%. Generally, the performance, I think it's not good. It's very bad, in fact. But now, other issues that you are raising for not performing are just administrative issues that should not be an issue under normal circumstances. So I think it's a very serious challenge. For instance, if you look at slide number 18 on program 1, where you speak about the PPI 102, the percentage of targets achieved against those planned in the APP. Now you say it says 28%. Now the comment on deviation says unavailability of the APP operational plan. So the question, why don't you have an APP operational plan? You see, I think it's a reason that it's just unacceptable to say no. The reason is that unavailability of the APP operational plan. Yeah, also on the issue of the payment of invoices, of the legitimate invoices within 30 days of receipt, where we are at 76%, but now the variation of this 23.92%, we are saying it's mainly related to historical debts for travel, cell phone, computer services. I think like Honorable SAO indicated, I mean, when are you going to address this? Because at some point it needs to be addressed. I think it can appear every year to say, no, it's historical, so therefore it means you must understand that it's historical. I think whether it's historical or not, I think there are ways to address this so that you are at 100%, because that's what we're expecting, that people should be paid within 30 days. Invoices must be paid within 30 days. So this issue of saying, no, the historical thing, travel allowance, cell phone allowance, I think it's just unacceptable. There should be a way of addressing that historical challenge. When you look at slide 21 under program 2, where you speak about the number of PPI 202, number of deserving military veterans with decent housing per year, the target there was 1,000. For this financial year, you achieved 270. The variation there is 730. It says the reason on the comment, it says on deviation, it says administrative challenges on contractual issues with developers, and that's also an administrative issue. And it also says lack of land to build houses for military veterans. But I don't understand this one of the lack of land. Understanding that we are working with the Department of Human Settlement, which also work hand in glove with municipalities. So I don't know, maybe you can explain to me the challenge of the lack of land to build those houses. Because I mean, if you have money, because the challenge that we should have, we should say, no, we don't have money to do it. But here we know you have money to do it, but we're saying there's a lack of land, there's other administrative challenge, like issues of service provider, contractual issues with developers and so forth. Yeah, I think we We should congratulate you on under program 3, on PPI 303, the number of military veterans businesses provided with access to employment opportunities. I see there that we had a target of 110, but you achieved 164. I think that one is quite remarkable. I think we need to congratulate you on that. Yeah, but all in all, I think acting chief DG, I think you need to put your foot down. I think otherwise you will go back to a qualification. You need to put your foot down in addressing this particular matter. I think also the issue of diversion was on the particularly on the STM unit. To say please, I think there's, I've learned somewhere that there's one contractor who got a project that is worth more than 500,000, which was not did not follow the normal bidding process. Those are issues that we should not be sitting with, because we all know the legislation. So why are we doing that? Why are such deviations without the proper approvals and the acceptable reasons for that? Those are the issues that I think we need to deal with. Just all in all, you just need to put your foot down, otherwise we might regress. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Honorable Skosana. Honorable Boyi, you are welcome. Any other? Mm. Thank you. We fight. Okay. Honorable Mchongo?
No, mine is very short, Chairperson, you know. Particularly, I'm attracted by this on page 5, that there was less than expected delivery against skills development services, delivery that led to less than expected spend on appropriated budget. You know, what I wanted to find out from the department, though I understand, Jefferson, in one of the previous meetings, I raised a question to say, if then the DOD has got an outsourced HR service, which I don't understand how in the first place it came about, according to those presentations that we received then, do you have a skills plan for the department? I'm raising this, Jefferson, because you know, if you go back to the report by the Statistician General, he said, in South Africa, there is a serious gap where you find that the aging people are the one with who are better equipped in terms of skills than the young generation because of the history of the country where we come from. Many of our people who found themselves out of the country and in struggle and all that spend a lot of time. And that legacy stands with us. If then the department doesn't have a skills plan which talks to that, we are going to perpetually run into a danger of having most of these people, because most of them are not that much old. You'll find them maybe the last group maybe in the late 40s. And those people can still be economically active. But if we don't have a clear intervention plan as to how are we going to skill them, we are going to have a situation whereby you find them interventions. Like, for example, I've seen these guys in Guamashu, for example, spending a lot of time in interventions because they've got absolutely nothing to do and they are just dying because of frustration after spending time. I'm talking about those from the non-statute, from the former non-statutory side of it. If we don't have a clear a skills plan as to how to intervene to that, we are going to actually have a serious problem there. Because that sentence, I think it talks to that particular kind of a problem. If maybe the department has actually then checked up itself to live up to that particular reality. But then lastly, Chairperson, you see, yesterday the Auditor General's office raised serious red flags that talked to either deteriorating management capabilities or stagnation. Before one can talk about maybe all these things, is there a plan, Chairperson, that we can say maybe before the end of this parliament, maybe we can have a clear blueprint as to how these red flags that were raised by Auditor General's office can actually then be closed? Because they talk to underperformance and poor performance, which can either emanate from structural problem or incapacity, where you have got home bodies but who are completely not capable to actually discharge the required services in order to take the department forward. Now, have you developed a kind of a systemic approach so that the next parliament can be able then to talk to these things and then come up with a remedy and assist the department to be able to stand on its both feet and recapitalize itself? I used to say, Chairperson, in South Africa, in fact, I find a very serious contradiction that poor countries like our neighbor here, Mozambique. Mozambique, because of the capability that you find in their defense force structures, their people there are better skilled than our people here in South Africa. Because of the strategic plan that their government or the defense division came up with to equip these youngsters. Now, in South Africa, with a very big economy, we are failing dismally to actually then come up with a plan that will make our people actively involved in their own economy. Go anywhere in the parts of South Africa, people in the construction industry, everywhere, you'll find these Mozambicans. Because South African people, the answers, theirs is just to go to taverns. That's all. Everywhere in the country. Because we are really failing to live up to this kind of actually ensuring that we actually capacitate our defense division to be able to discharge its utmost best without that blueprint which will be sustainable to address this particular gap that we inherited as part of apartheid past where we come from. Black majority people here will just remain completely useless in the active market and undermined by these people. Then you get these so-called xenophobic competitive attacks and all these things, because they've got nothing to do. They don't have a know-how. Their country cannot provide. If maybe we can, I can just end there. I don't want to barge into these other details, because everything to me depends on leadership, depends on organizational structure, depends on systemic systems being put in place that will talk to one another in order to ensure that they address these particular deficiencies and inequities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mhlongo. You, Acting DG, you may not be able to answer the question about the position of the Deputy Minister. I think you do not give delegation to Deputy Ministers and Ministers' question. And please, can you go on, Honorable? I'm just, Honorable Boyi, you can just take over when I'm outside.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Except to say, my office, I've got a responsibility at least to work with the Office of the Deputy Minister. And I can also indicate that he does call me to his office, we do what needs to be done, and also I've got a responsibility, and he said to update him about quite a number of issues which he might be interested in. So from my office, that's a kind of arrangement. I can also indicate that even this week, I was in his office, I spent almost a better part of the afternoon dealing with the issues which are relevant. So there is at least, and I also get direction from him in terms of how he understands certain things. In terms of human resource, I think a part of our challenge as a department, talking to dismissal, speaks to consequence management. I think because people have got used to not doing things or doing wrong things but nothing happening, and therefore it becomes a part of culture which is a wrong culture. So this is one of the challenges at least with people. So HR, please, you just correct me. I'm not quite sure whether there's any person who we have dismissed. I think the one we have dismissed was probably not coming to work, was somewhere here in the Western Cape. But of course, the labor relation issues have been taken up and the individual is still floating, but that's almost that kind of a person I know of. But that does not mean we're doing justice in terms of consequence management. That would be my point in that one. In terms of mitigation and improvement plan in certain areas, probably in capturing some of the issues here where we've got challenges and the improvement, we are working on that. They might not necessarily be captured correctly here. I would be speaking probably as a case in point, the issue of the skills development, just as an example, where structurally, for whatever good reason, we had a director as a director who was supposed to be director and permanent skills development. But then under him, he's got a deputy who is in charge of empowerment and deputy who is in charge of skills development. But for whatever reason, this deputy director of skills development does not report to the director. Although the structure demands that, but there's an arrangement done within that chief director where he reports to the chief director. But now the chief director resigned, is not there. Now the deputy, the director who's sitting there, now in the absence of the chief director, is not taking charge of this director skills development. But what we've done, we've realigned that, called everybody else, said to the director, you are in charge, you, deputy, you report to this person, make sure that it's written, and also make sure that people at least sign those documents necessary in terms of the reporting lines. And then in the absence of the chief director, make sure that that director gets appointed as an acting chief director, and then you align the structures. So we might not have probably captured some of the things which we are doing to go forward, but I think when we come back again, we'll be able to articulate some of the weaknesses in terms of reporting of what we do. Value for money, we spend 97% of the budget, but in terms of performance of the target set, we then achieve 27%. I think it is true, we've identified that, and of course it speaks to the actual planning, and it speaks to also our ability to implement our plans, and of course it becomes easier to move money from program to program or within the program, but that's not good strategic management. So we've taken note of that. We are at least addressing that. Part of the challenges in terms of the organizational structure and the reason why we are challenged with delivering some of the services, I think our structure, which is approved of 2010, is one which gives us 169. But now we've got to work with the Department of Public Service Administration and National Treasury and say what kind of structure we at least say would be able at least to perform with. And also the question of what looking at the structure organizationally, we've got to agree about the model in terms of service delivery. So what kind of service delivery model do we at least need to be able to do what, which will inform our structural arrangement? Yes, we are engaged within the department, we're looking at that, discussing that, and of course we are also engaging the minister so that in line when we go to the Public Service Administration and National Treasury, we speak in the same language, but there's an acceptance that we need to do something in terms of what needs to do. Now, unfortunately, I have missed the turnaround strategy and what we've done with that in terms of the, and what the turnaround strategy was. I was, are you able to speak to that? Turnaround strategy?
Thanks, teacher. In summary, in terms of the turnaround strategic initiative report, we have been working on addressing issues because the report was very specific. It had implementation milestones and timelines. So we've worked on a phased approach. And in terms of target setting, I think we're still working on that in terms of ensuring that we set smart and realistic targets. But we had quick wins, as you may have seen, which was maybe, amongst other things, the appointment of the CFO, which is now filled. There's other critical posts, including the post of the Director General, the vacant DDG in the CES environment. All those were listed as part of the quick wins. I think the acting DG at the moment is working pretty hard to ensure that most of those posts are being filled. I think there is much progress that can be reported formally to the committee. But it was, like I've indicated, it was a phased approach. There was phase one, and then there was phase two and phase three. So I think we need to then go back as a department, then measure ourselves on performance against each of those phases. But I can also report that I think on phase one, as the AG has indicated in their summary slide, it has shown some improvement in financial accounting. It has shown some improvement in supply chain management overall. So there are milestones that we can then report to say these have been achieved. We know the weaknesses in terms of ICT, as well as some work still to be done on internal audit. But I think DG will have to go back and then prepare a formal report on that.
Thanks, CFO. Chair, in terms of the human resource slide, we spoke to about 73 additional posts. I think this is one of the probably challenges that with the structure which is approved, which is at 159, we are not doing very well in terms of making sure that at least the approved structure is filled. And again, the qualification and experience and the capabilities of the individuals also speaks to what we can do with what we have. So this is one of the challenges we're faced with. And of course, then trying to address the problem, we ended up with these contractual employees, which also is not necessarily the best route to follow. The best route to follow is to finally firm up on our structure and then look for at least competent people with skills and of course empower those who might not necessarily, but there's potential, identify them and empower them so that we can move. Share with your permission also, one of the most important things for the organization is a little bit of consistency, especially at the top level when it comes to the top management. Unfortunately, the department is not stable in terms of the top level, but I hope the minister is looking at that and addressing that. When we also, I'm mentioning this because there was a question raised with regards to the middle management, discipline, performance, doing what is expected of them. Middle management, also the one of the best things in terms of management, is that when somebody does something which is not in line, then there must be an example. And then once at least people begin to see that if you do this which is not right, this is what you get. And then that's the way people learn. But unfortunately, if we leave it a little bit longer, and then people begin to understand that well, whatever you do, nothing happens. I think that's the challenge. But we've agreed as a department that at least consequence management is critical. And vacancy rate, we are working very hard to at least appoint the individual which are concerned, like the chief director database, The post was advertised, the post person was interviewed, and then those who at least made it, they were referred to the competence test, and now it's a question of now the document being submitted to the Office of the Municipal Minister to sign. I'm just mentioning that as an example, which is the same with the DDG for the socio-economic support. The post was advertised, then the at least the applicants or application were consolidated. Now that all that has been sent to the Office of the Minister, for the Minister at least also to do the shortlisting. So we are looking at that. It was supposed to be done before the end of this week. So that would be the HR side. When we come to the benefits, Chair, the issue of how do we prioritize these benefits of the department, whether we agree about what actually is a priority, and also making sure that we allocate the funding according to our priorities and the demands out there, and the policies we should inform what we do so that we can be able to, say, to avoid shifting of funds from one program to another. Because if we then we shift funds midstream, it's an indication of not a good plan. I think basically that's that. And this is why we ended with more money being shifted from a number of programs going to education. And education, of course, became the place where we can put money. And this is where then the value for money comes in. It's not that we didn't plan. Unfortunately, we could not do what wanted to be done, and then the money was moved. The issue of monitoring all the benefits, not only education, that what happens to those who fail, that also is very important. How do we know that the people have failed? So the monitoring of that, working with the school, so the stakeholder management and communication strategy becomes critical, and monitoring the individuals as they go up. So this is one of at least challenges or weak points we have identified in terms of monitoring, which also the very same monitoring, whether you call to speak to skills development, how many individuals have we skilled without skills, and then are they employed? All what we do presently, we skill them, and that's the end. We don't then follow up to say, okay, what? And speaking to the skills, I've just had an opportunity to speak to the deputy director who's in charge of skills development, and the director who's in charge of the electric chief director now in this environment. We've identified the same weaknesses, but again, the question is, in terms of the skills audit which was asked, when we look at the market, what skills are required out there? It doesn't help to give somebody a driving license or to train a person in security who's also coming from the military environment. Then you train him to use weapons again. It's just a process which is not producing the skill which is required out in the market. So this is one of the shortcomings we're having. And of course, we have to identify, this is what we agreed upon, some of the sectors which are going to provide us the skills which are required. And we've got to link up in terms of MOUs and service level agreement with the Department of Labor so that we can scan the environment, get to understand what's required. Then encourage our people to go towards the areas where the skills are required in terms of the market so that when they come out, we can also be working with some potential employers out there, because we know these are the kind of skills required. So we are not yet there in terms of monitoring and follow-up. The issue of our database is very critical, because it's a center of gravity when it comes to who is actually benefiting. Are these people real military veterans? Are these really dependents of the military veterans? And are we spending the money to the people we're supposed to be spending money on? So, yes, we are spending money. We are also asking this question. We are also getting information that, in fact, there are those who are excluded out of this arrangement but who are bona fide military veterans, but they are not in the system. So this also is a challenge, and this is why the appointment of this chief director for us and the director becomes critical. But not only that, the working with the Department of Home Affairs to make sure that their system of South Africans and the dependents of these people Because sometimes if the synonyms look the same, and then I bring my brother's child, who happened to be sharing my surname, but is not necessarily my child, and then there will be a certificate, but the certificate doesn't indicate the father or the mother of the child, then at face value it looks like it's my child. Yes, I do qualify as a military veteran, but the child I'm bringing on board might not necessarily be a dependent of mine, because my brother also might be employed in government. But now, how then do we make sense? You need to go back to Home Affairs and then be able to link with the system of Home Affairs and have a visibility that this child, which has been submitted here as a dependent, is this child really a dependent? And then if not, then we need to ask questions. And then if, for whatever the child has been adopted, then there must be documentation which speaks to that. So yes, we are looking at that. And
sorry, General, before you go on. The best certificates are categorized on abridged and unabridged. Do you ask for a bridge or an abridged? Are you aware of that?
Yes, we are aware of that. This is what now, because we're going back to history in terms of why we ended up with this one. Now, to counter that, this is why now we've then begun to say, okay, if you give us a birth certificate, give the one which will indicate who is the father, who is the mother. Now, this is where you begin, again, in terms of the underlying things, get some of the military veterans to say, I submitted all my documents, now you're asking for documents. So it becomes also a question of communication. We should be communicating with the various associations, explaining ourselves why it is important that the correct documentation which we're asking for is at least provided, to avoid some of the things. And we're embarking also on a communication or outreach program to indicate to military veterans, it's not that we're making their lives difficult, but it is important because the money is not available in abundance. So this is what we are doing, Chen. The transport system, it is true that we have not managed to set up targets and also the policies and SOPs which speaks to this. And hence, we then trying to engage the Department of Transport to understand how do they approach it, and also trying to with the Department of Transport and the Department of and the various municipalities see how best can we at least come up with a policy which is going to speak to transport subsidy for our military veterans. And of course, again, from our side, an ID which is going to be authenticating the individual as a real military veteran. So these are the systems we're looking at. But unfortunately, we didn't have that in the past. The question of the dual support, I think we look at the required aspects in terms of the complaints and the submission will be made in terms of what are the challenges and what complaints might be out there. But part of the challenge is just those service providers.
No, the chairperson was supposed to be joined. He's seated at the back here. He's smuggling himself in.
He's not the co-chairperson in this committee. He's a member of the public. He's coming from there. Okay, you're welcome, Honorable Man. Okay, General.
Thank you. Therefore, in terms of the challenges, it's less on us supporting the dependents and the families of those who have passed on. But the challenge when it comes to the invoices, it is more payment to the service providers after the service has been provided. But the actual service has been provided, but the invoices and everything else might be delayed, and we are clarifying those. The SRT, yes, it's not a policy, but it's a ministerial priority, and the issue here, the understanding was when the minister undertook this, gave us this direction, was that it will be a kind of a breather for 12 months for the individual to stabilize. But as nature would prevail, if one gets this for 12 months, it becomes a kind of an entitlement. It becomes difficult to take away. And the individual begins to budget his or her life based on this intervention. then it becomes difficult to manage. And then it creates then problems when after a year, as it was agreed, then it's not renewed. Social workers, yes, we finally employ them, and we're trying at least to address that. But we'll try our level best also those who are not approved, that we can at least revert back to them to inform why they are not approved. As a way forward, we are also engaging the Department of Social Development and see if individuals like these ones, how they can be assisted so that we facilitate, support them and coordinate with the Department of Social Development so that they can be supported through those kind of programs. And also we are trying to link this with the issue of old age pension, the military pension, because there are those who are part of the Second World War people who are getting some kind of a pension. Then we're looking at how we can then, our own NSF members who are not yet 60 years old, but unemployed, can't make a living, how then do we at least say taking them on board? And also see if, with Department of Social Development, that military pension can be upgraded so that at least in terms of today's challenges, they can be supported. When it comes to housing in terms of certain provinces, we are working with them. And of course, some of the provinces, we are looking at those where houses have been built, but people have invaded and occupied illegally. So what we are as a department, within the department, we have come to look at is that if somebody has been sitting now illegally occupy the house, but he's a military veteran, and probably has been there for 6 months a year, is it really worthwhile to kick the person out, or can we try and regularize the process? But this is something we're discussing among ourselves within the department, but we're preparing to engage SANVA, so that with SANVA and the various associations, these are military people, they're supposed to be disciplined, they're supposed not to be doing what they're doing, but we need to go and address them so that if we then try and regularize this, we do not end up with a kind of a precedent that becomes too difficult to manage. It should be something if it's a once-off for control purposes, but then we put up mechanism to prevent illegal occupation and, of course, working with various municipalities. And also we've got to work with the Department of Human Settlement and provinces and SALGA to make a difference, because if we approach from that perspective, we'd be able at least to move forward. Well, I think I've the issue of submission of information and documents, we have alluded to that in terms of consequence management. And of course, we also indicated the internal audit as part of the internal control. The challenge there, you've got almost two individuals, the director and the deputy director, and then you don't have actual foot soldiers to do the job, but presently even that director is not there. So these are the challenges in terms of filling that booth. This is why some of the things at least are not happening. Then in terms of the ICT, CITA and us, and also this, the building we're occupying is not conducive for us at least to be able to put up the land point and everything else, and it's not able to accommodate all of us. We've been laboring under the understanding that we're moving, but that temporary arrangement has tended to become a permanent arrangement, which becomes difficult for the ICT people to do what's required to make sure that our land system are in place and the ICT at least is supportive of what people need to do. That's part of the challenges. I think the issue of leadership, I've addressed, senior management I've addressed. Now the assurances, I think in terms of the assurances, speaking to the level of the minister, we have at least engaged the minister, I can at least share that with the committee members, in terms of our strategic work session with the minister, so that as a department we can get strategic guidelines with the minister. And we've agreed with the minister that on a monthly basis she will come to us, and with the top management will be able at least to get guidelines and share with her whatever might be our challenges and what we're doing with those. We have had already the first one, which was last month, and we're going to have another one with her this year, this month. And she has agreed in terms of our strategic work session that before the end of this month, we need to embark on a strategic work session to look at her priorities and her concerns so that at least she can be able to speak to us as management. So yes, in terms of assurance by the minister, we're working on that, and I think we're on the right track to improve it from whatever it's looks like in terms of yellow, that it can be green. CFO, if you can just assist with the issue of payables and fruitless wasteful expenditure, what are we doing, and the supply chain management and the challenges facing that, and of course the potential fraud in terms of investigation and the status of that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Just quickly on the issues of SEM, generally, as I've mentioned earlier, as per the summary slide, we've shown generally an improvement. However, there were material findings on SEM. Probably one which was the highest value was the procurement, which was above $500,000. I think that matter is still under discussion with National Treasury, because we had written requesting permission to deviate based on the circumstances at that time to use a venue to host the MKMVA conference due to late instruction that came for the department to assist with hosting that event. However, when Treasury was reporting their deviations for that quarter, they included that matter as unsupported. Meanwhile, when we interacted further with them, they said no, but this matter was still under discussion. Then we have then engaged with them further, where they were supposed then to give us the final outcome. So that matter on our part, we had to disclose it. It was a finding because AG had to then make a finding for us to disclose. However, we did indicate to AG that that matter is not concluded as yet, where Treasury still needs to give the final outcome to the department. So basically, that was the gist of the matter. Generally, SEM, we are working hard to ensure that the department members must also then appreciate, based on previous year's performance, mostly on SEM, there has been lots of irregular expenditure, even if you look at the historical register. If you look at the year under review versus the previous years, we would have shown much improvement, except where there were issues related to contract management. So it means that overall, for the year under review, there was much improvement in terms of number of matters raised on irregular expenditure. The status of the investigation, which was a potential fraud, we did outsource to Sizwentsaluba Koboto to perform a forensic investigation for us. The report is almost ready. They've sent us a draft final report. We've just then written back to them to then improve on the quality of the content of the report, of which then this morning we did contact them to say we need the final report. So the report will be available the next time we appear before the portfolio committee. But the accounting officer was briefed on the draft final report. On the issues of 30 days, yes, we acknowledge we should improve. However, I must state that we ensure that we pay mostly SMMEs on time, Chair. As we always report to Treasury on a monthly basis, non-compliance is mainly the volume of invoices related to travel as well as Vodacom, and some being the sitter. Travel with FLEP, because we don't only do travel and logistical support to DMV officials, but we do most of our support to our beneficiaries, which is our stakeholders, external stakeholders, being the military veterans, through SANVA. Then the challenge is that the timing of receiving the invoice, processing the invoice, because we don't have an automated system at the moment, as we have already indicated earlier, that we not using Logis at the moment, which is an automated system. Everything is tracked manually. But the system is very operational because then it requires lots of resources. We receive an invoice, then we prepare a payment submission. It has to go to a head of the branch who's normally not there because we are lean in terms of financial delegations. We'll have to wait for them to be back in the office. By the time they get a chance to process those invoices, it's already after 30 days. So, as the DG has indicated, we are busy fast-tracking the process of using Logis. Logis will ensure that you track invoice from the time you place an order to payment, so that you ensure that you expedite at the payment processes. And Logis has the ability to link with our basic accounting system, which is BAS, so that everything is integrated. And it's got exception reports that you can run to track which orders have not been settled so that you can monitor. At the moment, everything is manual, but the sooner we move to Logis, the better. And the plan to move into Logis is in place. DG, I think I'm covered. Maybe in terms generally on irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I've already indicated that if you look over the years from 13-14 to current, though we have delayed the investigation, concluding on investigations, I think the arrival of the DG has given reassurance, as well as reassuring the DMV officials that to carry out an investigation is not punitive, but to carry out an investigation on irregular or fruitless and wasteful matter is there to improve the way we do things as a department. So again, it involves a lot of cultural change. So cultural change is a process, but we have been given a go-ahead to reform.
Do you mean showing the money of the taxpayers needs cultural change? That's what you're telling us now. Showing the money of the taxpayers, is it what it needs? Cultural changes. What is that now? Is it not your money?
Yeah.
Why do you talk about like that? If you're talking about your own money, you can talk like that. But you're talking about taxpayers' money here. And you say taxpayers' money needs cultural change. What is that now? No, don't come and talk things that are not here. Mm-hmm. Don't come and mislead us here openly. If there's irregularities because you've charged the money. And don't mislead that accounting office. I know him very well. You know that we're to abandon you in Scopa because of you charging money. What is this thing that you're talking about? You have been abusing this fiscus. Now you come and mislead the committee here and says no, it's because you are not improving. Irregularities are irregularities. The money has been charged. If you come with this type of an explanation to Scopa, you've been fireproof. I must just tell you upfront. You can't come and say to us it's the cultural change to do wasteful expenditure. What is that thing? Do you do that with your money in your house? Don't come and tell us things that are not here.
Honorable Plumber, you want to make a follow-up?
No, Jay. In fact, I tried to raise my hand earlier on because I failed to understand. Maybe management will help me here. You know, associations of military veterans, individual associations, my understanding is that they are just nothing but somehow political. But at the Samba level, that's what you have got as a statutory organ of veterans. Now, I was just deeply moved when I heard the CFO talking of MKMVA conference funding. I said, look, but How are you going to treat that? Because really, it's not on, really. I must tell you honestly, it's not on. Otherwise, it will open the state to serious abuse. Because even at an MKMVA level, will you tell me that the department just went into which side of it? You have got the National Council, which is then up, because then you'll find the department now meddling into the politics at a political level of these veterans, instead of actually presiding over as a state organ. Now, I don't understand what if I heard you well there, really, because you will get APLA tomorrow, another faction of APLA coming to you saying, no, we want also to be funded. Another faction after that has been funded coming to you. But it's a different matter when you talk at the SANVA level, because SANVA is a statutory organ of these veterans. But for you to boil down to this thing, now I don't know whether you did that at a time when the, I don't know whether he's still the chairperson or president of MKMVA Mapaso was funding his faction. Now, you need to be very careful about this. I'm raising that chairperson because really I can't sit here as a member of the public of parliament saying that the money of from the public purse will go and fund political formations and all that, because that will be a mess. And I don't know how you account about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable,
when
you wanted to make a
follow-up, let me... No, I wanted Msongo to settle and relax and put the blame squarely on the department. You can't abuse fiscals and come and hide about MK here. MK didn't authorize those things. It's you who are responsible. The principle is simple. You can't use the money, the fiscals, for things that are not here. Under which authority did you use that? These people are wrong, Chief.
Mm.
You don't have to even to be going about the bush. He's out of order as CEO of the department. He's supposed to look after the fiscal. That's why they are in the wrong now with the Auditor General. Because he's abusing the fiscal. You don't even have to be doubtful. It's wrong.
Honorable Issao?
As a matter of clarity, I do understand that there's progress being made comparing to last year or the year before regarding SEM and issue. I just hope for our purposes, if we know there's 12 million that is in fruitful or wasteful and there's a ridiculous expenditure of 3 million, we'd like to know some of the details. I do understand the progress, but I need to understand what's the current situation of those things that happened last year. This is the annual report of last year, and there must be consequences. What happened? And was the situation then, we can see the progress, how was it addressed? So just to get more details of those issues, please.
At this stage, I'm going to give you an opportunity to round up, because we are doing bad in terms of time for our next meeting. If you can round up in the next 5 minutes, you will give us a written responses, and if there are any questions, remaining questions from members, they should be, they must be sent to the secretary for the department to give us written responses. Over to you, Acting DG.
Thanks, Chair. No checking of the issues raised by the honourable members, especially in terms of how we interact and how we assist and support various associations, including SANVA. So we will, as you said, take note on that. And in terms of the remaining issue, when we come to areas where we've shifted funds to the other areas, like the provincial offices and the database, and of course move money in certain areas to the health service, we have looked at our own planning and the history and what we've been doing in the past. At least that should inform us to plan better than we've been doing. And of course, it's critical that we put the provincial offices in place so that we can be able to reach our military veterans out there. As the remarks and, of course, a question by Honorable Skosana in terms of us not resting on our laurels with the AG's opinion, and findings in terms of unqualified opinion with findings. I think we've taken that to heart. We'll at least make sure that going forward we will look at the post-audit plans and we will at least follow up what has been planned in terms of after the audit. In terms of internal controls, the challenge has been the audit committee was not necessarily there. It took us some time to put in place and finally for it to function. And also the issue of internal audit was at least spoken to. The record system is part of the challenge to make sure that our records are there and we can be able to go back if any information is required. So, of course, the automation would assist. But in the absence of that, we need to look at that, including the issue of the spend versus performance and value for money. I think setting targets is something, and performance indicators is something we have not mastered. We are looking at that to make sure that we set targets which we know are measurable and also are achievable. The issues of procurement, I think, has been addressed. And then in the absence of Honorable Mshongo in terms of skills development, probably the question, I might have misunderstood it in two ways. The skills development speaks to the military veterans, and I think I've alluded to it that we are trying to look at the skills required out there and be able to assist and advise our military veterans to go for skills empowerment in areas where we are at least comfortable that they will be able to get employment, and us to start engaging other at least stakeholders in terms of employers out there. The other skills development plan, which speaks to the department, we are at least serious about that. We'll be probably reporting to that to the standing committee today, and we'll be able to indicate where we are. But it is critical that we are able to establish the skills gap, and then so that we can develop developmental program and training program for our own staff so that they can be empowered. So we take that to heart, and that also includes all the members, including the former NSF members. So the structural challenges, capacity, capability challenges, and systems challenges is something which at least we've come to take very seriously. But getting there and changing that is going to take some doing. And lastly, the consistency and the presence of senior management becomes critical in achieving the set goals. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Submit the questions. Co-chairperson of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense Committee. Honorable Mlambo.
You start by eating.
We want to give the co-chairperson 2 minutes to eat. Well, 2 minutes, and then we're opening the meeting. Thank you. The portfolio committee meeting is adjourned on that note. Yeah, that is the remaining questions will be submitted to you, and those which were not answered will be answered by written response. Okay. Can we get the answers on Monday? We want to factor them in the PRR.
I'm going to go to the hospital. I'll take it next time. I'm going to go to the hospital.